Let's start with a little laughter here on Open Sources.
Good times. Welcome to Open Sources, Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, shorts on, and my shirt as well. So I haven't shirtless photobombed anybody today, although it certainly felt like I probably should or could, because, scorchy.
I'm going to leave that there.
Yeah,
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can also listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe on iTunes. Today, we will cover the Olympics, not the sports, mind you, but the race to finish the games before the whole thing falls into the polluted ocean. There was so much controversy about Rio's preparedness before the games, and while it's not a complete disaster, it still got bullet holes, and we'll tell you what that means. Then the BC government introduced a 15% foreign buyer's tax on home sales in the greater Vancouver area in the hopes of reining in out-of-control housing prices. And while the moves put a chill on the housing market, was this the long-term or even the short-term solution Vancouverites were looking for? And then finally, the Green Party met last weekend to discuss party politics, and in the process, approved the move to boycott, divest, and sanction Israel over its actions in the occupied territories. But was that done despite the objections of the party leadership? And is this boldness on the part of the Green Party, or are they confirming their own unelectability? But before getting into the first topic this week, in case you missed it, earlier today, the infamous crack video of the late Mayor Rob Ford was finally made public. The publication ban was lifted when the charges against Alexander Sandrolisi were dropped this morning. I know I posted it on the opensourcesguelph.com page. And if you want to check that out, I don't know if you got a chance to watch the video, Scotty, but...
I did. I just happened to be near a machine when it came out, and it's, you know, it's only a minute long, and that was like, it was kind of like... I had a feeling, it was almost like deja vu that you'd seen it already. It was just sort of filling in a bit of a gap.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there wasn't a lot. There was a lot of yakking, not a whole pile of smoking, but he did, but...
Yeah, and a lot of it was incomprehensible.
Yeah, which is fairly typical.
Yeah, and so it's... Yeah, over 3 years since we first heard of it, so it's kind of like, I don't know.
The denouement.
Yeah, it just like reminds you of, you know, those albums that it takes from your favorite bands that take like years to come out and then they finally come out.
It's like the rare track, right?
Yeah.
The missing track.
It is a lot like that.
Just when you think it's over. And as I was saying before we got on the air, always a Thursday. Ford News is Thursday. I don't know why.
Well, maybe, perhaps not anymore. But
no, not anymore.
This was the last.
Well, it could be the last. Who knows what else will surface?
We'll see. What I know is keeps surfacing, and maybe keeps going beneath the surface, is some of the stuff that's going on in the U.S. presidential race, and that is our first topic for today. So I'll say Trump, and Scotty, you'll say...
What the blank? Fill in the blank. It just when you think, you know, somebody had said it this week, more than one person, like, did he actually cross the line this time? Sources say, yes, he did, in fact, cross the line this time. For everything that's come out of his mouth, and I'm sure you've all heard it, I'll give you the exact quote and see if you can. By the way, if she, Hillary Clinton, gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. And then he pauses for a second and he says, although the Second Amendment people... Maybe there is. No one laughed. You're watching this tape. There's no one laughing in the background. He said it was a joke initially, did all kinds of backtracking. That's not what I meant. What I actually meant was the Second Amendment people are strong. When you make
United,
a comment like that, there's no reading between the lines on that. He stepped over the line. He jumped over the line and into a ditch.
Although if you do look at the background, there are a couple of people with their hands and their collars going, gow!
Going, no, no. He has like the Three Stooges, right? It's like, whoa.
Except, I will...
He's the Shemp of the operation.
The one thing I'll say about that is old outrage. That is...
Yeah.
That is old outrage because yesterday, I think it was yesterday...
Fresh outrage.
He accused... Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton of being co-founders of ISIS.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like they just had a little meeting in the basement there of the White House and said, let's hatch this thing.
I mean, it fits into the narrative, right? You know, the whole thing with the Benghazi in particular, that, you know, from the moment Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State, she began to hatch a way to kill Americans. That was her preoccupation, was like, I got to kill Americans. Mm. All I think about is killing Americans. How can I do it? But yeah, I mean, it's some people are taking it a bit too far. Oddly enough, some people are taking Trump's comments too far, and that Trump has said that we should find ISIS's leadership and kill them, as if that's not the number one priority for
the
U.S. military. Some people are taking that to mean that Trump is suggesting that Obama be killed. Because I would not go
that
far. That's
a bit of reading between the lines, I think.
Because, I think that's certainly more thought into the comment than Trump puts into his own comments.
Oh, definitely.
One of the things I found about this entire situation is not just the outrageousness. I mean, it's almost like I'm desensitized to when he says something like completely asinine or like borderline. I mean, it's almost treasonous. He's suggesting that someone who could be the next president of the United States should be assassinated for having a political opinion or for making a political decision, let alone the fact that Hillary Clinton nor any other Democratic politician has got up and said, let's repeal the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
As an observer of American politics and as someone who doesn't like guns, I would love for someone to get up and say that just to set the bar somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, but otherwise, no one's saying that. No one's saying, let's repeal the Second Amendment. They can't even get, you know, more gun control passed, even with 90% of the people wanting more strict gun controls in the immediate aftermath of Sandy Hook. But on top of that, what I'll phrase it like this is, I was looking up information yesterday for what was in these newly released Clinton emails about, you know, her staffers arranging meetings between diplomats and people who donated to the Clinton Foundation. Now, if I wanted to go strictly on right-wing news sources like the Daily Caller, Breitbart, Drudge, I am set. But if I wanted to go through like media sources that I think are perhaps more balanced, like let's say the Washington Post or
CNBC or something.
Yeah, one of those places. It's hard, other than like perhaps a one-off article that says this is what came out today. Like, there's no real analysis. So I hate – it's not that I think that the two scandals are kind of on par, but, I mean, the Clinton scandal is legitimate, whereas Trump just opens his mouth and lets his belly rumble until the next stupid thing he says. And what's infuriating about that is the cycle of it. He says something stupid – it festers for days. His people manage to get him on track long enough that he's able to give like one or two speeches without going off the rails. And then it happens all over again. And the day after, there's another stupid bomb. And we're off to the races again.
Well, unless, I mean, he just can't help himself. Like, it was that he came out with tax policy. He was talking about different tax brackets. And these are the meat and potatoes things that people, I think, want to hear in the lead up to the election about the tax cuts, you know, the usual stuff. He kept getting interrupted. But then it was like, there was a point he was still, there was the two baby incidents. One was this, he was still going on about this baby that got kicked out of the, wherever the heck that was with the baby.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was still going on Twitter about this baby. He's like, well, the baby needed to go. But then there was
the baby needed to go.
It was something like that, not a direct quote. But then there was this other, I saw this weird baby story where there was a baby with a faux hawk, like a giant faux hawk, and a rhinestone. This to me sums up the whole Trump campaign. The baby with a faux hawk and a rhinestone pacifier that had Trump's face on it, and Trump like autographed the baby, like he signed the baby's hand with a Sharpie. And I'm like, this, I don't know, to me that was like a very telling moment. It's like, yes, that's it. Faux hawk baby gets signed by Trump. That, I don't know, and I know that sounds very base, but at the same time it's like that's where I see this going, because it's, I don't know, infotainment? In a scary way, because the guy might win, although the polls suggest otherwise. All polls seem to suggest otherwise. And even if they were particularly wrong by 20 percentage points, he's still, you know, at this point, very much in the toilet.
I mean, that makes me nervous that people are like, oh, he's losing by so much
exactly,
because it's like 88 days out. Thank you, Wolf Blitzer. Your countdown clock every day on your show really helps me out. But yeah, it's like 88 days to the election, and it's the middle of August, so, you know, people aren't really paying terribly much attention. So, I mean, there's room for him to manage to pick himself up. I mean, if this is still going on, you know, on September 11th or October 11th, he's in real trouble. And if there's anything, perhaps if people are concerned about perhaps where Trump is going or his chances, is that, yeah, on Monday he gives this economic speech. And I mean, it's full of the usual, you know, Republican stuff like tax cuts for the rich, trickle down economics, you know, stuff that hasn't worked in 30 years. But there was a point where somebody gets up and starts yelling, and it's like a protester, and somebody gets yelling, and he stops and he watches them being escorted out, and you can see it on his face. He's
machine.
Just desperate to like, just say it, get him out of here. He wants to so bad, but he knows how important this is.
Yep.
And that goes to the temperament thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially
loose
after,
cannon, for sure.
Right, especially after last week where it was reported that he had a meeting with foreign policy advisors and asked three times why we couldn't use nukes. You have to ask that question?
Yeah.
And further, you have to ask that three times before you accept the answer?
Not cool. And he was interrupted, I think it was like 14 times. I don't know if it was staged, but... You know, there was a bit of a pattern there. Maybe it was to see what the reaction was going to be. Mm. So, and you may ask yourselves, well, what if Hillary? She just has to kind of sit back because all we, you know, seem to talk about, all everybody's talking about is Trump. Something significant that came out this week was that the parents of the Benghazi victims, you'd mentioned Benghazi already, are suing her for a wrongful death and defamation. It was filed under a group called Freedom Watch USA. I don't know much about them, but just by the name alone sort of implies that they belong to that, you know, the other side of the spectrum, let's say. So I'm not sure whether how much of this is coming from the families or how much of it is this Freedom Watch USA have sort of been pushing these people to do it. I mean,
I think it's the one family.
It's
I don't,
one
like,
family in particular?
Yeah, because I think the family of the diplomat or the diplomat's mother has come out and say like, stop using this as a political issue.
Yeah. But it's impossible not to.
Well, it's impossible because they've spent more time investigating the death of four Americans in Libya than they have investigating 9/11 and Pearl Harbor combined. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the one fan. It's the mother who got up at the Republican convention and said that she personally blames Hillary Clinton for her son's death, and I'm not sure how that works.
Well, it's like the family's blaming Tony Blair for, you know, the Gulf War. Call for too.
Well,
yeah, so yeah,
it's still, I mean, it's still tricky.
But yeah, that, I think normally in a normal election cycle, that would have been a bigger story than it was, but it's just been buried by every time Trump opens his mouth, which is like all the time.
Well, yeah, that's the point.
And, so she doesn't really have to do anything. She just kind of has to.
But the insane
cruise.
Stuff, I understand the focus on the insane stuff, but even the less insane stuff, like him talking about last week, Trump, I mean, that. How he got this letter from the NFL that they are object to two of the debates being held on football nights. Like, well, if you take away every day, every night of the week football's on, that leaves Tuesday and Wednesday. And I'm sure Trump would find some reason to be against Tuesday and Wednesday.
They should just hold it like halftime. Okay.
Just make it the halftime show.
Sure.
No, it's so ridiculous because, I mean, the NFL football is such an industry now. It's now on 5 days a week because it's such an industry. But leaving that aside, now he's – after it was – the NFL came out and said, we didn't send you such a letter. Now he's moved on to – well, he wants to have approval of the moderators. Like, only moderators who are fair, quote-unquote fair – which I guess means like...
Somebody from The Apprentice that got
second
place.
Omarosa.
Omarosa, that's the name I'm trying to remember, yeah.
No, yeah, it's... I mean, it's so silly. Like, he said, like, yeah, Lester Holt's treated me okay, and Dana Bash has treated me okay, but this other person over here has treated me horribly. I don't want them. And it's like, dude, it's not up to you. There's a National Debate Commission that chooses moderators. And
it's usually somebody from PBS, isn't it, right? Like,
yeah, there's usually...
It's like neutralish. It's like we get TVO... Yeah. We get Steve Pagan all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, it's Steve Pagan. Yeah.
I think Bob Schieffer, one of the anchors from PBS, was one of the Candy Crowley, because famously what happened in 2012. Mm. And then there was somebody else. But usually it's like major anchors on from the network.
Yeah.
But it's like, story, dude, you can't choose. Like, it's not, you know, your cast. It's not like casting The Apprentice, right, where you get to choose the people you think are going to be a good fit. It's a presidential debate. So the question is going to be, is he going to find a way to bail on the debate because, yeah, oh, this person isn't fair to me, or there's football on and nobody's going to be watching, or whatever the reason is. Meanwhile,
he's going to get buried. Yeah, that might be part of it.
And meanwhile, you have Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party candidate, now on the ballot in 39 states. Ooh. And from what I've heard, from one article I've read, the venues for the presidential debates are preparing a third podium because they think he might actually be able to tip the scales and get in on the debate. So
it's not for the mysterious Evan McMullen, right?
He
probably won't be able to get on the ballot, right? This is the CIA operative that's supposed to be an alternative for the Republicans to vote for. But
at this point, it'll be tricky for him to get on a plurality of ballots.
A bit late to throw that in, but
yeah, I mean, yeah, it's too little too late, but I mean, if Trump decides he's not going to show up and Gary Johnson is on the debate stage and it's a Hillary Clinton-Gary Johnson debate, is Trump willing to cede that one of the major party candidates isn't going to be at a presidential debate and it's going to be a third party candidate, the Democratic nominee?
He'll just hold his own debate with himself that'll broadcast in parallel, probably.
I mean that's the kind of stuff I wish we would dig into more. Like, forget the crazy cat lady stuff he says. This is, I mean,
yeah,
the
right.
The real issues are he's trying to change the game. And you know what? Yeah, he's changed the game in some respects, but I mean, there are some aspects of the game you can't change, and it's not because people are out to get you. Or out to, like, this is the other thing, is him implying that the system is rigged, and if Hillary wins, it'll be proof the system is rigged. Yeah, yeah. That's problematic.
Yeah, so.
Anyway.
Still changing the game weekly, I think, so.
Yeah. I like to say this will be the last time we talk about Donald Trump, but.
maybe after November, we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. So moving on to another controversy, the Olympics. I want to read a quote, and it's from, what's funny?
No, it's just, it's just the, go ahead.
All right.
We're in good humor today.
It's from Bob Costas, who has covered more than a couple of Olympic games for NBC Sports. He said, and I quote, "Rio probably has the biggest array of problems or potential problems of any Olympic venue." So this is a guy who knows.
Mm-hmm.
And just to reference back to earlier, the bullet hole. There was a bullet hole in the press room at the equestrian center. So the press are in there covering these horse races. Or I don't know if it's a race. It's a horse show.
Equestrian show.
Right.
Yeah.
And a bullet comes through. It's like, it's basically a tent. It's not like it's a solid brick wall structure or anything, but a bullet comes whizzing through.
And what was it they said? Whoever it was from the favela was aiming at the media cameras or something on the blimp. And they excuse, well, this sounds like excuse season at the Olympics. They're always making excuses for whatever, but it's like, oh, the bullet didn't have very much velocity. It's like, what's still a bullet, right?
It's a bullet.
Come on. Yeah. But where there's one, there might be another one to follow, right? It's like, well, it wasn't going very fast. It's like, okay. It's just, I think I wasn't laughing at the bullet, but just the whole Olympics in general, in terms of there used to be a show on called the Laugh Olympics. That's what this reminds me of, you know, from green swimming pools to, mm-hmm. you know, this is the big story. Why is the pool green? It's like, there's obviously something wrong. They're like, oh no, the water's fine. And the same with the, is it the boating events or whatever? Somebody's like, yeah, there's people like in boats getting viruses and stuff. They weren't even in the water and they were getting infections. And this one guy's like, I'm willing to do this for my country. Are you crazy?
Yeah.
Some of those things can kill you. Never. And then, of course, the virus to end all viruses, Zika, is seems to be an issue, but it's become an issue in the States already. I mean, is it Miami? Whatever. Yeah, it's spreading.
Well, it's not just in Miami. It's an affluent Miami neighborhood where a lot of tourists go.
Right.
So that's why
they talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's an issue.
So it's in Brazil. Psh, who cares? Yeah.
But Zika's almost become the least of the concerns.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And you're talking about the rowing events. They're putting bleach on the paddles. Bleach on the paddles to go and do the race.
Don't inhale. Whatever you do, try not to breathe too much.
Yeah, don't inhale.
Somebody go around with a NIOSH mask on. Like,
here's a good quote. The water has, quote, dangerously high levels of sewage.
Hmm.
You'd think moderate levels of sewage would be enough. But no, this is dangerously high levels of sewage.
Where is it coming from? No one sees that.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, it's a bit... I don't know. It seems to have, the problems seem to have. You actually had to type like real problems into the Google, and it would and you would get it because the reporting it seems to be on the results, and you know how many medals everybody has and how many medals Michael Phelps won today. I think it was 33, but
something like that.
Yeah. So it's hard. It's kind of a buried story, but it's hard to bury it. It's not. It wasn't like Hillary email news. Hard, you know, buried. The things like the McDonald's in Athletes Village had to shut down because it was just so overwhelmed. This is McDonald's. This is the you know, how many McDonald's are in Guelph? At least a dozen, I would say. This is a well-oiled machine. This company. This and they aren't making anything terribly.
Difficult
or complicated. Yep. You throw it in the fryer, stick it in for 2 minutes, bada bing, bada boom. You got, you know, your McNuggets and your fries. Fill up your Coke thing at the dispensary. But they were overwhelmed, and they had to shut down. The Olympics shut down McDonald's. That's how bad this is.
Mm-hmm. And there was also that problem with the admissions as well to the events. It was,
yeah.
That was jammed up. It's, you know, they always say either at the beginning or the end of the Olympics, like, these are the best Olympics ever. I don't think they'll be able to say that with any confidence this time, for sure. Plus, all the other things going on, too, such as the drug tests and people who have failed drug tests in the past, winning medals in particular. What was his name? Yulia Efimova, the Russian. And these athletes giving each other stink eye. Meldonium, she tested positive for meldonium, which is, you'll remember, it was Maria Sharapova tested positive for. And she won a silver at the Olympics. In 2012. So there's a bit of a pattern here. But, of course, what did the Paralympics do? They just said, okay, no Russians at all.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize this. That's obviously a separate body from the regular Olympics because they didn't have the sweeping powers. And I think Russia is saying that it's a human rights issue, that they shouldn't be allowed to do that. But I guess they can do what they want because it's, you know, it's whatever.
Well, Russia does what it wants, so they think everybody should be able to do what they want.
Yeah. But, I mean, of course, and I think it's a bit of a joke because the World Anti-Doping seems to be a bit of a joke that, you know, 70% of the Russians have been able to compete, including these alleged cheaters. But, you know, again, as they're saying, you know, it's almost as if the sports are the least of the worries. I mean, drugs used to be the story, right? It's like someone, you know, from East German swimmers on. But, yeah, and the problem in Brazil, too, is that there's so much going on politically as well. There was the, you know, Rousseff being suspended. And it seems that half of their I'm finding the political angle here. Half of their Congress is
the political angle.
The political angle. This is what we do. So the Congress has about 600 people. Half of them are under investigation for corruption. This is like half of their government.
Only half
is being. Yeah, exactly. It's almost like it just goes with it. Just goes with it. It's like, so what kind of corruption? And one of my favorite things that always makes the rounds in Olympic season is somebody always posts abandoned Olympic venues. So they always say Olympics are supposed to do this big, encourage, you know, stimulate the economy and this and that. But and one of them, which isn't that old, was Sochi, the abandoned Sochi. You know, Sarajevo is one that they always show, but that was many, many moons ago. And it was actually pretty modest looking for in terms of Olympics in those days, I guess so. But now it's just, I mean, they've cleared out. How many did they clear out? 70. I think it was something like 77,000 people were cleared out to make Olympic venues.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only outnumbered by the amount of security on this Olympics, which is something to the tune of 85,000.
Yeah.
The security number just keeps getting higher and higher and higher because they're terrified something's going to happen. But and I don't know. That's not since Munich. It's since, you know, the new age of terrorism.
Well, Atlanta.
Atlanta, yes.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if it's all worth it. I don't think it's worth it. I'm not a huge Olympic fan, winter or summer. But you know, when you have Sochi, which is basically a skate park, 2 years later, it's, you know, it makes you wonder why are we. But I mean, if you live in these areas and these countries, dumping so much money into something that takes so much work to prepare, is logistically fraught. You're basically trying to finish it right up until the last minute, or even leaving it half unfinished if you're, you know, one of these athletes who moves into your quarters and, you know, you have to put up your own shower curtain. And then it's over, and then it's like any other abandoned structure in your city. Mm-hmm. It seems quite bizarre, and it's a question that's going to keep coming up, because we saw the trouble with the 2022 Winter Olympics, trying to find some place to hold that, and it came down between Kazakhstan and China. I think it was Kazakhstan.
Yeah, who was awarded it?
It was China.
It was China.
Yeah. And it's when you look at the numbers, $1.1 billion cost overrun.
Yeah.
In a country that really couldn't afford a $1 cost overrun.
No. It's so scammy. I mean, this is the thing. It's nothing against sports in terms of it's always interesting to see people do amazing things. That I watched that floor routine from the American, and it's like, wow, that's pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, you say, well, there's the whole who's cheating and who isn't. They're making it out as if none of the Americans are cheating at all. That's the vibe I get from the news that I've seen, or I try to avoid it, actually. But it probably isn't true. And then it's like, again, what is the end result of this, you know, little circus that comes to town for a couple of weeks, both with the lead in and then when they're gone? I mean, is there really any economic gain to be had from it? The Olympics were in Montreal in 76, and it took them forever to pay off the damn stadium, let alone whatever, right? And, you know, I think people were happy with the Olympics coming to Canada then. Then, of course, we saw the boycott years of 80 and 84, right? Mm-hmm. The Moscow Olympics. Like, somebody will inevitably say, well, the Olympics aren't political. The Olympics are completely political. Mm-hmm. It's almost hardly about sport, really, because there's, you know, this whole IOC infrastructure and with the issues that go with that, too. It's unavoidable. It's not just about sport. And I think it was probably like that from the kickoff.
This particular Olympics was political because it was meant to show off how awesome Brazil was doing. Mm-hmm. And in between
sewage
then and now,
green pools. Yeah.
There was an Australian Paralympian who was held up in gunpoint and robbed.
Oh, wow. I didn't hear that one.
Yeah. And then, One of the Mercury reporters, but Waterloo Region Record reporters is down in Rio, and he got on the bus to go and cover the rugby final. Got on the bus, and the bus took a wrong turn somewhere, and took them on a 3-hour tour. You can't even get to your event on time.
I was going to say, do you know if this person went down on their own dime? Because I don't know if the Waterloo Record would fund Olympic reporting.
I don't know.
It's probably going to go in the blanket of papers, right? The stories would be filed with the whole organization. You would imagine what's left of them.
I mean, there are a lot of regional athletes who are down there as part of Team
Canada.
Oh,
that's true, too. They've got quite the crew this time, don't they? Seven.
And a lot of the rowers were training here in Guelph. Not necessarily on campus, but here in Guelph.
So we'll root for them.
We will. It's just...
Convincing, wasn't it? We'll root for them.
I guess we'll share them on, whatever. I mean, on top of it all, 82% of the tickets have been sold. And, you know, are you going to buy a ticket when the bus can't even get you there on time and then you have to wait 90 minutes to get in?
The ticket sales going to even remotely cover the cost? No.
No.
Not even close.
No.
Stop with the Pan Am game? Oh, never mind.
Anyway.
Ay, ay, ay.
Anyway, we're going to take a break and then come back with more issues and discussion here on Open Source Guelph. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Hi, I'm James Gordon, and you are fortunate enough to be listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph.
That was Toulouse from Danny Romano off of his new mono album, Mosey, on New West Records, number 30 on the CFRU chart this week. And a bit of a note there, special guest vocal, the woman on that was none other than Rachel McAdams. Da-da-da. Because she's like my favorite, like in the movies, like, eh? I heard somebody talk about the movies the other day. I was like, yeah, did you like see that movie like? So
Rachel McAdams, the actress?
Rachel McAdams, the actress. Is like the best, like. Anyway, that was her doing that thing.
She's so, okay. Actually, she's better than okay. And in
Spotlight, man. That's a film.
Spotlight is good. Oh. She is good in Spotlight. And she is in
Mean Girls. She's good in Mean Girls.
Yes. And I was going to say she's in coming up in Doctor Strange.
Oh.
She is. I don't know what her part is. She's a nurse in the hospital Doctor Strange works at before he becomes Sorcerer
Rachel
Strange.
Can do anyway. No wrong in my world. So anyway.
She's good.
Still time, though, I guess.
She's good. Okay. Enough talk about Rachel McAdams.
We can get our little movie bit, like
Slings
every
and Arrows. Oh, yeah, yes. Slings and Arrows. Yeah. She was in the first couple seasons of Slings and Arrows, too. There you go. Yeah. So we're going to talk about Vancouver. And if you were paying attention, and why shouldn't you, in the news recently, the British Columbia government had a summer, very quick summer session to approve a foreign buyer tax, 15% foreign buyer tax. So if you do not live in Vancouver and you are looking to buy a house, you now have to pay 15% more. Sounds like a good idea. It's perhaps not as good an idea as people may think, because it's had an immediate cooling effect on the housing market. And you may say, well, that's a good idea. Yes, it is. But there are several outstanding deals that are now kind of caught in the middle. People were trying to close before this went into effect on August 2nd. I believe this is like kind of like the anecdotal example, but there was a house in West Vancouver that was selling for $14 million. The foreign buyer tax adds $2.1 million on top of that. And, you know, we may think to ourselves, and yeah, Scotty and I may also think to ourselves, yeah, there you go, stick it to the rich guys. But that's not small potatoes. And, I mean, that's kind of this came about very, very suddenly. It seemed like 1 week the BC government was talking about it, and then the next week it was a done deal.
Yeah, the numbers I saw was something in the realm of over 400 deals will fall through or have collapsed to the tune of $400 million. Now, this is a market where the average cost of a house is at least $1.5, $1.6 million. That's average. So then there's, of course, the ridiculously overpriced homes like the one you mentioned there that was taxed to the hilt. So it sounds, yeah, I think the assumption was when they put this through is that, oh, well, you know, they'll probably just pay it. Because the idea, I think, of it was that the money, and I'm not sure how this works, but supposedly the money raised from it was going to go towards affordable housing. I don't think it's going to happen. So, you know, this is just sort of throwing a grenade into the whole process. Is it going to settle down? Probably a little bit. But, you know, the initial predictions, I think they were going to lose like $1 billion eventually to this. Mm-hmm. So is it going to have the effect, the desired effect in terms of the market? Well, yeah, if the market's crashing a bit, then no. But there was a lot to indicate that this was kind of a popular pre-election measure. There's an election coming up in BC, and it's like, if the perception is given that, I think it was the NDP were kind of riding the Liberals, saying, oh, they're not really doing anything to cool this housing market, in particular foreign buyers. So, you know, the Clark Liberals take a step back and go, okay, we're just going to do this. So they, you know, Liberals are famous for doing this. They have the advantage, I think, in terms of that. But it's also something I found out, like, it seems like right away there was at least one realtor found a loophole, like almost immediately. It was like, well, why don't you just transfer the purchase to some people that live here? Hmm. And then you can, you know, there's no tax. If you live here, there's like there is no tax on it. So I'm not sure how much of that has happened, but it didn't take long for somebody to find a workaround. So is it strong legislation? Probably not that strong. Somebody can say, hey, I'll just transfer it to you, and then I can save $2.1 million or whatever.
Well, that's the thing when you kind of ram something through quickly, right?
Yeah.
The flip side of it is there are people who are like maybe moving to Vancouver, like from abroad, mm-hmm. and they're coming to settle, and they're being classified as foreign buyers. The point of this is to target, you know, people who are like in China and perhaps using real estate as an investment. You know, I have money lying around. Well, money can be subject to all kinds of fees. I mean, liquid money, you know, in bank accounts in terms of fees and that kind of thing, capital gains. But if you own a home and then, you know, rent it out, that's a different subject. Those are the people that this is supposed to be targeting, or people who have, you know, houses and condos in four or five different cities and, you know, just jump around. And it's, you know, it's what they call ghost apartments. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem in San Francisco and New York and Vancouver and a lot of big cities like that. But there was, I think it was on CTV, they were talking about it, and this poor Iranian guy moving to Vancouver and making it his new home. He's very excited, and then whammo, you have to pay more for his condo. And it's like, well, I am a foreign buyer in that I am coming from abroad, but I am coming to stay. So why am I being forced to pay this? Like, I'm trying to add my cultural and individual and economic distinctiveness to the area, so it seems like I'm being punished for wanting to move here.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, there should have been some sort of contingency built in there for somebody. It's like definite intentions to settle, mm-hmm. working toward either getting citizenship or a landed immigrant or whatever. Mm-hmm. They should probably be exempt, because, I mean, the whole idea, if you're trying to attract the foreign talent, as they always say, right, you're trying to attract people, you know, the brain trust or whatever, to your city or town, and then something like this happens. I mean, it's obviously you're going to lose people that you probably wanted to come and who are actually physically coming, as opposed to just sort of dumping money. Because it sounds like BC in particular, or Vancouver in particular, is like a big, almost like a money laundering organization. All these ghost condos, you say, like you can look at a condo at night and half the lights are out.
Yeah.
Is a bit of an indication as to what's going on there. They're empty, regardless of where the money came from, offshore or whatever, they're empty. But I think, you know, maybe probably not all the realtors, but a lot of them don't care as long as they can make the sale, right? You make the sale and you get the money. Who cares, right?
Yeah. And
who cares where the money comes from?
I mean, that's part of the problem, right? Is, yeah, a lot of them are crying foul that now there's this additional tax. It's like, well, no, what you're crying is that your this sort of never-ending revenue stream is sort of drying up. And you hear all these stories about a house going on the market at 9 a.m. and it's being closed at 5 p.m.
9:01, yeah. Yeah,
9:10.
The teardowns are like...
Yeah, and I mean, there is definitely a situation. The cost of a detached home in Canada went up 38% over the last 12 months. In July, that came to $1.58 million. That is, I mean, for a lot of people, you know, you're not just priced out of the market. You are
priced out of the planet. Yeah.
You're priced out of the planet.
Pretty much.
That's a good way to put it. So, I mean, it's not like there isn't a problem, but it just seems like, I don't know where the sudden urgency came from to, like, this isn't a new problem. This has been an escalating problem for 10 years.
Well, as I said, I think the urgency was to, you know, optics with an election coming up. It's like,
oh, that's true.
Here's this. You haven't really done anything. It's like, okay, we're going to do this. So, I mean, they could backpedal on it. They could very easily change the legislation, but not without somebody going, see, we're wrong. But, you know, we'll
yeah,
see.
Yeah, you can. if our old friend at the top of the show proves anything, is you can't change your mind about anything, no matter how wrong you are.
No.
And this happened, too, in spite of the fact that a lot of the local mayors in the areas that are affected by this in the greater Vancouver area were saying, you know what, try a vacancy tax or, you know, a vacancy fee. Like, if you're not living in your apartment for 11 months of the year, you know, let's, you know, put a tax on that, which addresses the real problem, which is these ghost apartments and these ghost houses and condos and things like that, versus, you know, punishing everyone with the same swift sword, which, you know, defeats the purpose.
Yeah, so I don't know. I wonder how many of them go to Airbnb and stuff like that. Probably lots, right? Or just...
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Just a short-term, temporary everything.
Yeah, and there's probably a lot of places like that online. And I'm not sure how it is in BC. I know Quebec has a tax on Airbnb properties, that there's a specific, like, a hotel tax for, but for Airbnb sales, that in Quebec, and I can't imagine there's probably anything like that in BC.
My cousin's a realtor out there. We should get him on when this topic comes up again. He would love to talk about this, I'm sure. Tom, if you're listening, I'm going to call you. You're going to be on for the next round of BC real estate, because he's going to say, everything you guys said is completely inaccurate. No, I don't know what he's going to say, but...
I think he would probably also like to give everyone his contact information.
Oh, of course. I didn't think of it that way. We'll cut him off before he starts. Oh, we lost the line. There we go.
But it's... I mean, it's vexing, the speed in which this was done, the kind of...
Ramrod,
and it does feel like the BC Liberals were trying to at least give the appearance that something is going to be done, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if and they were probably trying to make it an election issue, but I mean, I think it's going to be an even bigger election issue now. We're going to have the NDP coming out and saying, well, you tried this solution, it clearly isn't working, and one of the things they're talking about is the chilling effect. There seemed to be an indication that there was sort of a natural cooling happening, and this is going to accelerate that, which could bring with it its own negative consequences. Whether or not that's true, I don't know, because you've had 38% growth in a year. So that's kind of unsustainable, but it does seem to indicate that there was a tipping point
coming.
There was a correction imminent when it's going up that high. So,
yeah, and you should mention their election isn't until next May, but of course, you know, all elections now, especially fixed election dates, the lead-in is always long now.
Yeah.
Long election.
I mean,
period.
The election will probably start in earnest in January. Mm-hmm. So we'll have that update when that happens. In the meantime, Green Party. The Green Party had a convention last weekend where they were going over party policies. One of them became a vote in favor from the members. It was kind of a grassroots effort to boycott, divest, and commit to sanctions against Israel because of Israel's actions in the occupied territories, some of which are controversial. And indeed, a measure like this, what they call a BDS, is itself controversial because of its not entirely incorrect connection to Israeli apartheid movements. I was reading up on this BSE because I'm like, well, this seems rather bold for the Green Party. Not that the Green Party can't be bold, but it did make me curious in terms of who else might have signed on to this policy. Most of the Green parties in the UK, so the Green Party of Wales, England, and Scotland, support BSDs against Israel, as does the African National Congress and the Central Council of the Confederation of Natural Trade Unions, which until last weekend was the only Canadian organization that, you know, made this a priority and put its support behind it.
Yeah, but there's also a lot of religious groups too, in particular the Quakers. I wrote about this about a year ago. So if you go to the Spanner book and go back about a year, I was talking about it was when the Conservatives in particular were condemning anybody who's remotely connected with BDS. And it was like, well, what about these churches? They're not – the immediate equation is if you support BDS, you're anti-Semitic, which, you know, in my view isn't true. And if you pick it apart, it really isn't true. But what was interesting about this being passed was that the excuses used in terms of why it went through were almost the same as the excuses for why did Mulcair get so clobbered at the NDP convention. It was because they said, well, only 300 people were at the convention out of how many members did the Green Party have? 20,000 or something. Quite a few, right? So they used that as the excuse saying, well, you know, there weren't enough of us there and we should, you know, maybe table it or put it aside, but no, it went through. And it sounds like this has brought something else to the surface. You know, is Elizabeth May going to take her walk in the snow or the walk on parched earth,
parched
grass,
dying brown
in this
grass,
time of year? You know, it could be because it's the way the talk went after this. She's, you know, it almost sounds like she was working on her exit strategy.
Yeah,
which was weird. This is after the fact. This isn't before. She didn't say, "Well, if you do this, I can't be your leader anymore." That's normally what would happen. You would think. So, of course,
although she was against it, and the people in her shadow cabinet were against it too.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the thing. If you have such a democratic structure in your party where it's motions off the floor and that, I would think the leader has to go along with it, right? I wouldn't say this is unprecedented. And, you know, I'm sure there's lots of issues where, you know, the leader holds back in terms of their judgment of it. But to come out and say, well, I'm probably sort of maybe going to leave. She's not, you know, she did say initially she was disappointed, but it's like, you know, I need to reconsider my future. You know, that's huge to me. And it probably just isn't this one thing in particular, but she's a superstar. I mean, her approval rating was like 93-94%.
Yeah, it was almost 94.
Who has that kind of approval rating? Obviously not Mulcair. but of the other leaders, I don't even think Trudeau's that high.
I would be surprised.
I'd be close, maybe, but not. I mean, big.
I mean, even Trudeau's general popularity is like 60%. So it would be surprising, not only just because she's clearly well-liked within the party as leader, but because she is the only Green MP, Green Party MP in the House. And say what you want about that, like, perhaps too much party effort and resources were poured into keeping it that way, making sure she got her seat back. The fact of the matter is, that's the beachhead. She's the beachhead. Mm-hmm. That matters politically more to the Green Party than endorsing BDS, one would think. Perhaps she didn't make it clear how much she didn't approve of the motion. And I'm wondering, perhaps she herself didn't realize how important that was to the membership. That there wasn't any kind of, like, deep discussion. Like, if it was just a thing, like, we should put BDS on the table. Yeah, we'll put BDS on. Sure, why not? And it seemed to come out of, like, a rather quick seminar, a rather quick, like, policy meeting on Saturday, and then came to the floor for a vote. And if she didn't realize how important it was to her, well, that's on her. And if she didn't realize how important it was to the membership, that's also on her. Because it seems to be important enough to make a vote of it.
But there's also the possibility that she just sort of let it go, right? And then, you know, let the chips fall where they may. And BDS, in terms of, tends to, we'll just say it again, boycott, divestment, sanctions regarding Israel, tends to create a certain amount of toxicity at this level of politics. Because as we know in the last election, anybody in the NDP who had remotely mentioned, talked about it, posted about it on social media, whether they were a contender to be a candidate. And there was one person, what was his name in Nova Scotia? Morgan Wielden was a candidate. You know, they got dumped. Libby Davies, somebody who was very outspoken about this, was just, I don't know if, you know, was it fall or push, but she didn't run again. it was like anybody that touched this, and Mulcair made it very clear that, you know, this wasn't, you know, full support for Israel or whatever. And that's, you know, this is the part that gets lost in the whole thing. I think official Green policy is a two-state solution. So it's not as if they're saying Israel should go. It's not like, it's not, you know, death to the great Satan's kind of thing approach to U.S., Israel or whatever. This is more so, you know, they're not against that, but it's like they see it as there needs to be sanctions put in place because of Israel's treatment of the Palestinian people. which is very bad.
Yeah.
We've talked about it in the past.
But it's incendiary because it's a criticism to Israel.
But it's automatically equated with anti-Semitism. That is the problem.
Well, yeah, but that's why. It's because there's such a visceral thing about criticism against Israel. And yeah. I don't know if it's like Western guilt or no. what it is, or because Israel stands as one of the few democracies in the Middle East.
Killing babies in Gaza. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, somebody should take them to task on that, regardless of what you call it, if it's BDS or whatever.
I don't disagree, but I mean, that's... Those are sort of the visceral, immediate reactionary reasons why. So I understand the politics of like being hands off. Mm-hmm. Like you don't want to touch this, and I understand why the NDP wouldn't want to do it. I understand why the Liberals wouldn't want to do it. The Conservatives, I mean, of course, Stephen Harper was very pro Israel, so he would never touch it in a million years. I do wonder what the thinking is for on the part of the Green Party. Because it certainly wasn't – this wasn't a political move. And you can give them credit for it. Like, this certainly wasn't political. This isn't going to advance the cause of getting more Greens elected.
No.
Because they're going to be tarred and feathered with this by at least the Conservatives.
Yeah, and I think it kind of overshadowed everything else going on in the convention, right? You know, the
oh, for sure.
policies you would say, oh, there's other policies coming out and they're – you know. They talked about, you know, solar panels on every school and banning the shark fin trade, things, you know, you think of as
electoral reform,
huge, opposing new fossil fuel infrastructure. You hear those things and you think, yes,
which
the
is
Greens.
A tougher battle, which is a tough
yes,
battle on its own.
Absolutely. So those things, nary a mention anywhere, yeah. unless you dig for it. And then it comes down to this. And then this is the sort of stay or go issue now for Elizabeth May, which is unfortunate.
Yes.
Because if she really, you know, if she wanted to leave, you know, the way to do it would be like probably at the convention, maybe, you know, it'd be like, and this leaves the question now, is she going to defect? You know, if she does leave, does she go independent and citizen independent until the next election, which is a ways away? Or is she going to be, as has been hinted in some circles, sort of drawn away, you know, the secret liberal Elizabeth May that people have talked about as it become reality? Should Catherine McKenna be watching her back in terms of, you know, many quarters this has come up, and I think there's some truth to it, you know?
And Catherine McKenna's been working overtime to prove
Catherine
she's like
McKenna's
super
awesome.
Green, and she's
yeah, like,
doing a lot of kayaking
oh,
lately.
Goodness.
So,
yeah, like. As far as that goes, like so.
Oh, no, oh, yeah, nothing against
well,
Catherine McKenna,
no.
but you know, it's.
But in
just
terms of just sheer enviro power, if Elizabeth
power.
May became available, it'd be like, well, you know,
it would be a no-brainer.
They wouldn't make her the parliamentary secretary. They would make her.
Yes.
I wish to defect. I don't know. We'll see if it happens. We'll know in a week or two for sure.
I can't help but think that she'll probably think better of it. I read the quotes from the interview. I didn't see the actual interview with Rosie Barton, but I read the quotes from it, and it just seemed like there's more. This wasn't something that she was leaning towards actually doing. I think maybe she wanted to be direct in her seriousness about it. And let's not forget too that there will be another policy convention for the NDP in 2018, conveniently right before the next election. So this could be something they test drive for a couple of years and then think better of in 2018, and say like, we're getting no traction on this at all, and you know, we're at risk of of letting political opponents, you know, mischaracterize this, and that could happen.
And if the great dream of proportional representation or some form thereof comes true, then, you know, this may be a non-issue, and that we will see more than one Green in the parliament.
Yeah.
I think we definitely would if it does happen. But again, that's the future. So.
And that's something we won't learn about until the fall. But that's it for this week's Open Sources. We can't wait that long to find out. We'll find out in a couple of weeks. And this wraps up our episode today. But if you liked what you heard, you can always re-listen to this week's episode on Monday morning at 6 a.m. when Open Sources is rerun here on CFRU. You can stay connected with Open Sources all week long, though, at opensourcesguelph.com, on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and, of course, on Twitter at OS_Guelph. You can listen to this and other past episodes of Open Sources at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or subscribe through iTunes. You can connect with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or visit my political blog, guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Twitter, also Scotty Hertz on Facebook, and the Spanner Book, which I mention every week, but nothing happens. But I think I'll start mentioning it when something happens. I don't know. Anyway, you can read my old article about the BDS, etc.
And yeah, send Scotty some emails to make more stuff happen on
send
the Spanner Book.
Send me an idea.
Yeah,
piss me off a little bit, and yeah. I'll write something. That's usually what it takes. So a bit of a goading.
We'll start a Spanner Book mailbag or something. Anyway, you can stay tuned next for I think DJ Sounds Good to Me. If she's not here in person,
sure.
She will be rerun.
Spirit, yes.
Yeah, be here in spirit and in the archives. Here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back here next week, though, with more open sources. That's Thursday at 5 p.m., and we will see you folks then. We'll be right back.